Da una lontana galassia stanno per arrivare due intrepidi eroi.
Io sono Jonathan e lui è Mario. Mario e Mario, sempre vicino a voi.
E perché non vi chiamate entrambi Mario?
Due guerrieri senza macchie e senza paura.
Johnny, vuoi prenderlo?
E se mi spara?
Difensori dei deboli e degli oppressi.
Guarda lui, è da ieri che sta qui, ancora non l'ha beccato.
Come ancora?
Con un destino da compiere.
Grazie per aver chiamato il servizio di robot assistenza.
Aggiustare l'universo.
Ripariamo robot, androidi, intelligenze artificiali e ogni genere di elettromagnetico.
Per favore, fermate quell'assassino!
Ma voi siete pazzi, siete dei cialtroni!
Su del cuore, nessuno alla barba!
Vi prego, dovete aiutarmi!
Cielo, ma quello è un disgregatore!
Prossimamente su questi schermi!
No, veramente non si vede nulla! Si sente?
Non si vede nulla?
No, niente. È un'audioserie!
Ah, allora, prossimamente sulle vostre casse!
Vabbè, però glielo dico subito, questo intervento è fuori garanzia, chiaro?
Guys, who is gonna join the presentation? Please sit. All the others get out of the room. Si sente bene? So good evening, and thanks for staying with me a little bit. I hope the audio is fine, and let me go throughout my presentation, which is going to be very intimate, but I'm sure there are other people watching this presentation on the YouTube live. Yeah, that's just not really at the beginning of the story. What is the subject of this speech? Well, first and foremost, it's going to be an easy speech. It's going to be about a story which is at least 40 years long. And it's a story of a product called Toons, which I will briefly mention. I will give you some information about this product in order to better understand and frame the story. Toons is a professional software solution for cartoon animation. It is a product which has been very popular over the last three decades. It just was used to fabricate animation masterpieces. Some of our customers actually got the Academy Award. I'm talking about specifically about Miyazaki, which has won the Academy Award in 2003 with The Spirit of the Way, Futurama, The Simpsons. All those products has been done with a software solution conceived and developed in this country, in Italy. That's just an excuse to go throughout the entire story of the computer animation, because the story starts 40 years ago. It's a long time. I am an old man, and I will let you see pictures which might be quite intriguing and, should I say, also curious for young people. Everything starts back in the 80s when I was a young engineer, just graduated from the university, and I started my career in a company working in the video domain field. The company was called SPP and was really very big at the time, maybe one of the biggest in Europe. Among different divisions we had in this country, in this company, there was also a computer graphics division. Look, we are talking about 80s, so it's really early times. And indeed, at that time, computer animation was just some maybe conceptual thing from the academy. I remember that the first product, 3D product, should we call it 3D, movie BYU, done in the Brigham Young University in Utah, it was just a command-driven 3D, rotate 10 degrees. And, you know, the triangle, well, actually, the prism was rotating. Very impressive at that time. So, early times. At that time, there was a pool of brilliant scientists at the New York University. Among them, should I say, there were people like Ed Catmull. Whoever is involved in computer animation knows that Ed Catmull is a prominent scientist, and by the way, one of the founder of Pixar and president of Pixar as well for a long period. Immediately after, I believe immediately before, or before Steve Jobs. So, and those guys designed a system, a vector system, which was, I assume, really the first commercial computer animation system available on the market. We are talking about late 70s, early 80s. And the system was running on this kind of machine. This is a VAX 11780 from Digital Equipment Corporation. It's very big. At least a couple meters tall, maybe slightly less. If you look at the picture, you will see that it's a big, big thing. And just to give you an idea, what are we talking about? All of us, we know the Moore law. So we know that in the past, the machines were very, very slow, and the slow was peaking over the time, and the memory size was increasing over the time. This is very rational. But if you go back to the bare information, this machine had a CPU of 512 kilobytes. So it was costing a fortune. It was consuming a quantity of electricity which was beyond the conceivable, and was requiring an heating system, an air conditioning system, A grade. Something really big. I remembered the fee of the air conditioning itself only was, humongous, something like 40 million lira per year. We are back in the 80s, so it's a lot of money, really a lot of money. Is the audio good? Understand me well? Can you listen to me well? Yeah, just to be sure, because sometimes, I tend to become suddenly not understandable. So again, that's the kind of machine. This was the mainframe. If you go to the next frame, let's see what else do we have. Next picture, please. Yeah, this is a PDB 11. So it's an old machine. very young people here, I see. We had a battery of those PDPs. We had three product lines, each of them equipped with a DAX 1178. We had a series of PDP 11, which were connected to Genisco frame buffers, which were MTSC sides, 8 bits per frame buffer. So basically, you were needing three of those guys to do a 24-bit picture, which was MTSC sides. Yeah, I mean, if you now mention those numbers, people just laugh because but that was the reality. And we were doing computer graphics, computer animation with this software, because the system, which was originally developed in New York, the computer graphics lab, New York Tech University, was then sold in two other copies. One went to Omnibus in Japan, and the second one went to Rome at CGE, Computer Graphics Europe, which is the company I was working for. CGE was actually a division of SPP. I started writing software for a special effect machine from Quantel, and then I was moved to become the technical director of CGE, so I was working with those machines as a user. I was not a programmer, I was just a user. That was also the time when the first 3D products were peaking, you know? I have some dates here because I'm very bad with dates. Softimage, which is already a mature product, was founded in the early 80s. But before that, we had a series of very advanced products which didn't pick up the market, actually. Let me mention some of them. One was from Wavefront Technologies, which suddenly has become later on Helios, and then later on Maya. So this is Maya, basically. And Thomson Digital Image, which was a fantastic product which didn't pick, and also the Bob Ewell software, the first one, appearing, which was our choice at that time for the 3D. So we had two different products. One was the huge, gigantic system. Let me show some other pictures, just to give you an idea. This is a 256 megabyte disk unformatted. And if you go next picture, this is sitting on my table in my house, and usually we have a vase inside it. I'm sorry?
Is it that profile?
No, it's just the inside of the unit. I mean, if you go to the next, maybe there is an RM05 disk drive, which was like a dishwasher, a very big dishwasher, and you were opening the dishwasher, putting this big disk inside, spinning the disk, and then suddenly you had this fantastic amount of memory available, 256 megabytes. Unformatted, because at the end it was 240. Yeah, now you see, I mean, you're an old man as well. So, and if you go next, just because we have some fans of old technologies, this is a TU-78 unit, fantastic tape unit. The mechanics of those units were incredibly precise. It's like a Swiss clock. I mean, they don't build those things anymore.
No.
Too expensive. They are really too expensive. But, you know, all the pneumatic part was fantastic, really fantastic. So at the end of the day, you have this huge system consuming a lot of electricity, requiring a lot of heating, of air conditioning, and at the end of the day, producing with NTSC frame buffers, you know. But yet, this product was able to do animation on film, at low resolution. We were using a dumb camera, but it was on film. And we used it for a lot of, there is still one opening series in TV, which is today still running in Italy. It's called Arrivederci al Cinema. the Italians will certainly know, because the music is always the same. It lasts at least 40 years, and it was done with the Twin, which is the piece of software written by Ed Catmull. On the 3D side, we had this series of products. One of them was the first we picked was actually the Bobebo software. If you go next, we should have here an SGI. No, that's the PT100 terminal. Go next, please. Yeah, this I took this photo this morning from my office. It's sitting there, proudly showing in our internal museum. It's a Silicon Graphics SGI 3030, the very first of its kind. It's not really the first. It was the very first. It was not the 300, 100, was 200, 2400 something. But this was the workhorse at the beginning. This is still based on the old Motorola 68000 processor. So, I mean, really old stuff. And they didn't yet start producing the RISC computer, the RISC processors, which appeared later on other machines, on their machines. And so, just to tell you how slow those machines were, even if this machine was skyrocketing in front of the box, and this was really incredible. I bought this machine, well, actually, I didn't pay anything. I was in charge of booking, of buying this machine for 180 millions of lira, which is an incredible amount of money for a machine which is now killed by any cheap phone in our pockets in terms of computational powers. Yet it was a time in which this was really a fantastic machine. We were using this machine to produce several news opening, TG1, TG2, and also TG3 as well. But the very first job we done was the opening of a Saturday evening program called Fantastico with Rafael Lacarra. And to tell you the story, there was a stupid logo spinning with Fantastico, a golden logo with the bevels, stupid things like that. And it was maybe an animation of a few seconds. It was taking 1 hour to render one frame. So to render a sequence of 180 frames of a stupid logo spinning around, we needed 180 hours. So something which is really far beyond imagination at this time. But, so again, sorry for jumping here and there. I mean, but again, we were able to do computer graphics in Italy. We were doing 2D animation. We have built a market for 2D animation, but at the same time, we had a serious concern. Those machines were too expensive. They were costing too much. They were requiring really a lot of space. The room itself was huge, bigger than this one, actually. The air conditioning required was beyond imagination. At the end of the day, it was not economically feasible. So we came out with the idea to develop the software ourselves and try to find out a solution which could have been at the same time effective, cost effective, and freeing our hands from the costs which were frankly not bearable of the American system. And so it was happening by accident. We started this internal project. At that time, we had some friends from the National Institute of Physics, INFN in Italy, and they were... I'm sorry? No, it was the Cabibbo group, the APA. It was a super parallel machine built by the Gabibbo group in Rome, basically to weight what was the weight of a proton. At the end of the day, the The throughput in output was so ridiculous it was able to write, but it was a number of, it was having a number of teraflops, which for that time was were unconceivable. And those guys, which wrote the operative system and the compiler of the AP machine, AP machine, depending how you pronounce it, I'm Italian, so I call it AP. Advanced. Those guys were joining us and using this platform, the SGI, on IRIX. Well, at the time it was not yet IRIX; it was Unix BSD. Unix BSD. And then suddenly, this also the VAX was running Unix BSD 4.2, which was quite strange. Strange. So, to make a very long story short, we came out with a solution which was very effective, and it was so effective for internal production that we got the idea to sell it, or at least to find out if there was someone which was interested in that. So in 1992, we went to the Chicago CIF Graph, and we had a meeting with Daniel Langlois. Daniel Langlois was at the time the founder and the owner of Softimage. So basically it was a marriage of interest, because at the end of the day, they were needing the 2D counterpart. We were really needing a distribution channel. They were skyrocketing. And during the year, they were working to the, well, actually, Spielberg was working at the dinosaurs, the first one, the first Jurassic Park, and in 90, which was released, I believe, in 93. So in 92, it was under construction, should we say. So we had this meeting with Daniela. Daniela was founder of the product. We finally decided to become Softimage Tools. And that's how the story started. We were hiding ourselves in the corner because we were Italian. And the Italians don't have such a great reputation as far as computer graphics is concerned. So we were pretending to be Canadian. Hiding ourselves behind a finger. And this was happening for a certain period of time, then suddenly, finally, we were able to wave our flag, because we were able to complete our customers. We were able to complete the first movie, a movie for which I have a very big affection. It's called Bolto from Universal Pictures. The only reason Bolto was not a very big success is because it was released just before Spielberg founded the DreamWorks, and the Universal Pictures was not very happy about that. So Bolto didn't get a lot of push. He made his money, but was not pushed that much. Still, is very beloved by kids. I mean, I'm surprised how it's really well known by youngsters and kids. It means that it was a nice movie. And we were so happy to do this job. We were part of the crew. We were in London all the time. And we earned the credibility. At that time, we were able to wave a flag and say, look, I mean, we did this. We did the software, which proudly did the software which was used by those artists to perform and create their work. And so, really, Toons started to establish itself like an industry standard. And for me, I had this great opportunity to witness the story of the computer animation from a very privileged point of view, because I was meeting Daniela, and then after Daniela sold the company to Microsoft. This was happening, I believe, in 94, just at the same time Bolt was released. And that's another story. That's another interesting story. Why Microsoft bought Softimage? Softimage at the time was really a boutique. They were doing this, they were this, producing this incredible 3D software called Softimage 3D, which then became XSI, and which was used to do masterpieces, to do movies which did really, was they were bringing the level to another step beyond. I mean, the dinosaurs were really a step forward in animation. And the floor of the SIGGRAPH, which is the convention for computer animation in the world, was populated only by silicon graphics. If you look at the movies of that time, you see a lot of silicon graphics everywhere. They were placing everything. I mean, silicon graphics was the verb. Then Microsoft decided to buy SG Soft Image for one only reason: push NT, so Windows NT. And they made it. They made it. I mean, they bought this company from Daniela, paying it $180 million. They were forcing this company, they were forcing also our company to bring the software on Windows. And then once the job was done, they sold the company to Avid for the double, 270. I mean, they are very wise. At that time, I was a Unix guy, which means that Unix is a religion. I mean, is a religion. And if you are in the Unix party, you are not in the Microsoft party. So when we started to be distributed as Microsoft Toons, because the name suddenly changed from Softimage Toons to Microsoft Toons, we were a little bit hesitant. Actually, we were a little bit this way, no? But I have to say that they were really professional. I mean, I regret I was not able to understand the chance I had. We learned a job we were not able to do. We passed to become from becoming a nice boutique to learn how to build professional software. I mean, the day after they bought the software, they bought the Softimage, I was called to Montreal to talk with the person in charge to handle the company. The name was Moshe Lichman. This guy was a former Air Force pilot in Israel, and he was a very tough man, a very tough businessman. He was calling me and said, "Man, look, Claudio, you have two options. First one, you learn to do the product start to end. So don't rely anymore on my company for manufacturing, for documenting, for supporting, for creating the manuals, even for fabricating the product itself. If you do that, we will keep distributing you. Otherwise, I mean, our way will part, we'll just separate." And I, at the time, I was leaving the story in very bad mood. I was feeling they were forcing my hands. Indeed, now, after so many years, I believe that this was a key moment of my professional life, because Digital Video, which was my small boutique, has become at that time, let's say, a company which is capable of producing professional software with the right grade standard, applying the right procedures for releasing, doing all the steps which are necessary to release a product, to do stupid things like out of the box. I mean, you get the box, you get someone which doesn't know the product, a box, which is sealed, and he has to install the software. It doesn't succeed, then you have a problem, you have to restart from scratch and redo the documentation. All that is part of the industrial process which we learned over time. During the time, we had the luck also to be selected by others, and that's the nice part of the story, by others, the other authors, and as I was anticipating before, maybe the most important in terms of artistic contents was Miyazaki. Miyazaki was selecting himself the software based on one only parameter, which was the ability of the software to reproduce all the nuances and designs of the pencil on paper. It was the key thing. I mean, all the reminder was secondary. And we were so good, should we say, to win the competition. So actually Studio Ghibli got equipped with our software. And this was really back in 2004, 5, something like that. Now, first time in my life, happened a second time later on, but this was first time in my life, we were finally able to have a customer which a development team inside. So Ghibli was, tomorrow, you will, whoever will attend this, the presentation tomorrow at lunchtime, will have the chance to listen to the presentation of Okui. The name is Shun Iwasawa. I mean, Okui is his boss, is actually in the picture, his leftmost side. And Shun is a brilliant and nice scientist, young. Well, he's not that young now, but he was very young at the time. He was one of the Ghibli developers. And for us, this was a great thing, because we were able to finally talk the same same tongue, the same language, no? And later on, we were selected by Don Bluth, which Don was in charge, was put in charge by some Fox general to build the Fox animation in Phoenix. Why in Phoenix? I was told because of the tax issues. Moving the studio in Phoenix, they were importing the entire crew from Ireland. So I still remember those guys really red in the face under the Arizona sun. They were just, red, because all of them were coming from Ireland, so very pale. Nice people, very nice people, big artists. It was the entire crew which was doing the previous movie. I believe the previous movie is about a mouse. What's the name? I'm so bad with names. Forget it. However, this was also a big achievement for us, because for the first time they were building an entire infrastructure around our solution. So I was in this nice position to know people which did the history. I am just, I do not consider myself a real expert. I am a manager. I am managing a company. I have a technical background, so I'm not a newcomer, but I am not really writing myself the code. The code is the software code, the Toon software code, is mostly from Gianmarco Todesco, which is a former IFNN scientist, and it's now our CTO, Chief Technical Officer. And again, the product peaked, and it went pretty well. It did very well. The owner of Digital Video, which at the time was not me, unfortunately, did a lot of money. But of course, the story of the software itself changed over time. There was a time, and it's not about 2D, it's about 3D. It's about professional tools for animation. The cost of those technologies were, frankly speaking, too high. The first copy of Toons I have sold was sold in 93 in Germany at $27,000 per copy. The price was, frankly speaking, far beyond imagination. Far beyond imagination. You can imagine the kind of profit you can do with those prices. Then prices went down and down, but still remaining very profitable from the standpoint of the company developing the product, investing and getting a return from investment. Then something suddenly happened, because Silicon Graphics decided to buy Maya and throw Maya on the market free of charge. This was the beginning of the end for the large companies doing business, selling products, because that from the time onward, the software product like Maya were becoming more a commodity, something that you price to attract the interest of someone, which will let you make money in different manners. So at the end of the day, this was the beginning of the end, because the price dropped and the 2D price remained sustained for a buyer. But then after a certain number of years, also the price of the 2D software was dropped, because it couldn't be conceivable to have Maya at $5,000 and Tunza 15. So, to make a long story short, the product was becoming less and less profitable until, and for us, one way of surviving was to start signing development contracts with customers, the most important of which was with Ghibli. So Ghibli got a certain point in time, in 2007, got the source code. We had an agreement, and we delivered the source code of Toons, and so the Ghibli people was finally able to develop their version, the Ghibli version. Now, this story went farther and went farther, because at a certain point in time, Ghibli, there was a crisis in the industry. The crisis came from the business model of Ghibli. Look, you need to understand a little bit and understand the Japan animation to figure out how different Ghibli is. Ghibli, let's call it the right way. Ghibli is in front of any other producer in Japan, animation producer. While all the production houses are very concerned about costs and the quality of the animation of the Japan animation, which is usually qualified by the number of drawings per second, that's the way you qualify roughly the quality of an animation, is very low, something like 4 average, which is of course not because of lack of artistic capabilities, just because of commercial choice. Of course, the quality is very low. I mean, if you look at the Ollie and Benji, those kind of animations, which are the backbone of the industry, they are not precisely top-end animation. On the contrary, in Ghibli, there was no compromise. No compromise for quality. No matter how expensive or complicated was, or I mean, until you get exactly what the director wants, the scene is not released. So we ended up knowing a piece of Japan which was completely and totally different. We were there very many times, and we started understanding at the beginning, I have to tell you, because we didn't have many other customers, and none of them with a direct contact like other customers in Japan, and none of them with the direct contact with us. Sorry. We had an idea of the Japan animation which was completely wrong. We thought that the Japan animation was the Ghibli animation. That's not true. I mean, it's not true. Ghibli is a fantastic place to work, but at the same time, it's an incredibly expensive place to drive. Very expensive. The model of Ghibli was conceiving, let's say, the kindergarten next to the studio, because all the artist kids were staying there. There was an entire family of cats going around. I mean, it's a very familiar thing, but with no compromise for quality. This model, unfortunately, was not sustainable. So at a certain point in time, they shut down the studio. I believe it was because there was no mean of producing something without restarting from scratch, with, let's say, more economically sound criteria, which is a pity because you lose some very nice things. But at the same time, now Ghibli is back. And I believe one of the key things to bring Ghibli back was to close the studio and reopen it with a different approach, but still with the same philosophy. And again, you will see that Shun, which was in the group of people developing the software, moved during the period in which Ghibli was closed to work for a company called Duango, which is very large telecom operator in Japan. It's only a company which does $1 billion per year, even more, $1 billion per year. So it's really big in comparison with the other companies. Not a million, a billion. And that's the most intriguing part of the story I'm going to tell you. And he was starting working for this company. And then he moved recently, when the studio Ghibli was reopening, he moved back to Ghibli. Now, the story of Duango and Ghibli crosses with the story of digital video and toons in a very strange way. Because when the Ghibli studio was shut down, I've been told, I don't know how much this story is true, maybe it's partially true, part imagination, let me tell you the story in the same way I was told. Was a group of wise old animators, animation masters, and animation experts, Miyazaki, Suzuki, which is the producer of Miyazaki, the authors of Naruto, I don't remember the name, you know, people which were well known in the world. They were used to sit around and sip a coffee or tea, maybe, close to the kindergarten of Ghibli, which was still operating, although the studio was closed. And they were discussing how to help the animation industry in Japan. Because, look, the animation industry in Japan is somewhat different from what you think it is. We have the idea of totally computer-driven animation. No, it's the most manual process I have ever seen in my life. You think about large companies. No, there are very many small companies, very fragmented production pipeline. So they were asking themselves, okay, what can we do to help the animation industry in Japan? And then someone came out with an idea. I believe that there is a big admirer of animation, manga, cartoons, and a big admirer of Mr. Miyazaki, of course, which suddenly became a rich man, founding a company called Duango, and becoming a multimillionaire. He was a very rich man. So Miyazaki got the idea to give a phone call and say, look, I mean, what could you do for the animation in Japan? And the question and the request was coming from Miyazaki. And the guy was very fond. It's like getting an order from your all-time teacher, even if you are very good. I mean, you still have the respect, no? The kind of attitude you have in front of this person, which you respect, which you honor somewhat. So the question was asked, the answer was given, okay, what can I do? They asked Shun, and Shun said, why don't you buy me the source code of Toons? That's what happened. I mean, we signed an agreement with them, and they got the source code of Toons under the mandatory condition to publish that source code on GitHub as open source. So now Toons is an open source product. The name is called Open Toons.
Ah, okay.
Open Toons is produced by Shun, and by which is the, you know, actually the person in charge, is now back in Ghibli. It's available free of charge for the entire world. It's very used in Japan because, of course, has been designed to solve the problems of the industry, so it's quite diffused. And I believe that it's used in the world, all over the world. This step to put the product on GitHub, so to let Toons become an open source product, didn't kill Toons. We just moved from a different business model. We were staying rock solid in a business model which was losing, let's say, profitability. And it was the business model of selling licenses. And we moved to the business model of selling services, which is a different model, which was assuring a life for the product. Now Tunes is one of our products. It's not anymore our main product. We went to different markets, which are more profitable. We are in this moment, the main product we develop is called Orchestra, and it's a workflow management tool, media asset management tool with some business intelligence inside. We had a lot of ambitions. In the past, we released the product called, the initial product was Mantrix, which was then got by Snella Wilcox and rebranded as Momentum. So we have sold this product to Snella Wilcox. But you know, this market, the broadcast market, has different numbers. I mean, a copy of an orchestra goes from 50 to 100,000 euros. So justifies the very large investment done in developing state-of-the-art technologies, because this is really state-of-the-art technology. Selling products in the animation market was not that profitable. It's sad, because the market is fantastic, the people is nice. I had the chance to know artists, people which, authors, which usually you don't, you know. I had the chance to be in the titles of many movies, which is of course something which for me, a stupid engineer which is not unable to draw, is something which gives him a lot of, you know, a lot of satisfactions. And mostly what really was making the difference for me was the ability to look at the history of the computer graphics from back 70, 80, 11 to the modern technologies, to artificial intelligence. Maybe this guy will tell you about his experiments with artificial intelligence in 3D, which he did. The first results were not very appreciated by Miyazaki, I remember, but I'm sure that, you always have to make mistakes to progress and do nice things. But now, of course, we have a different, completely different scenario. And being an old man, I was able to really go throughout the entire history and I really appreciated this privilege I had. Even now, I had the chance to come here and talk in this context, which is little bit. I could say that I was side dish, no? Something to relax at the end of the story, at the end of this afternoon session, and with a story to tell you. I hope you appreciate it. You enjoyed it. And at the end of the conclusion is: when you love your work, you don't want your product to be killed. You don't care if it's gonna go on the market free of charge. You really don't care. What you want is to let your son be successful. And that's why we did the open source operation. It's not because of the money. I mean, the money is helping. Several hundreds of thousands of euros we got out of this operation were certainly very welcome. But I have to tell you that the real reason for us, for me, for the CTO, for the people which feel to be the father, mother, and brothers of Tunes, was the certainty that doing so, the product was staying alive and will remain alive. So in 10 years, 20 years maybe, someone will still use Tunes because we decided to move it on open source. Now, it's a long story which took quite a lot of time, I'm surprised. For me, it was just counting you the story of my life, or counting to a nephew, a young nephew, the story of my life. I don't know if you have any question. If you have any, I will be happy to take them. Otherwise, if you don't, I really enjoyed telling you my story, and looking forward maybe for the next com. Please.
First of all, congratulations, because it shows that you have passion for what you do, which I think is the most important thing in life. If you're so lucky to do a job that you really like and have passion for,
that's very much
it's
true.
It's fantastic. And it's the same for me, that's why I understand. Why the name Dunas?
I'm sorry?
Why the name Dunas?
That's a nice story. Look, I mean, we started this business very naive. We were very naive. And the boat was called Chuck. Yeah. Here in Italy, everyone knows what a Chuck is. Clapperboard, Chuck. Luckily, if in Italy everyone knows what a Chuck is, nobody knows outside Italy. Because in English, Chuck doesn't mean anything at all. I mean, you call it clapperboard. So when we went to Montreal the first time, they were calling this Chiac. What is that Chiac? And then they were asking me, what is a Chiac? Chiac, that one, this is the Chiac. I mean, my English was not that good at that time. So. And you know, we suddenly realized that the product had a wrong name, unpronounceable as well. So their marketing department said, okay, we will take care of that. Look, we were not in the position to guess a name which was right for the market. We were trusting very much more the Microsoft group doing this job. We only were asking the condition to own the name, which we own, as well as the website, tunsk.com, is ours. And then we asked them, okay, name it as you like. And they came out with this nice name, which is, let's say, like cartoons. It's like, you know, pics. The Z is like, you know, slangy, but at the same time quite... And Chiac is instead has become the first prototype name of... any other product with it. Now we have orchestra. The prototypical version of orchestra was called Chuck. And we usually say internally now that, are you still talking about Chuck or orchestra? Meaning the infrastructure, which has been the depot, everything was there, named Chuck, and then we started, doing this, moving everything in the new development environment. And by doing so, we basically pass it to the professional version, at least in our mind. So the name is coming from the Microsoft department, but it's very, very well picked. And while the original name was this Chiac or Chuck, depending if you are not Italian or if you are. Well. I didn't think I was even getting a question, because mine was a story, so you could ask, you know, what's the name of this guy? You know, you wouldn't. So, thank you very much for staying with me, and I look forward to be with you again, maybe this time without this damn mask. I decided to come here for many reasons, for Marco, because it was anxious for me, even because I was about to come the last year. And I mean, this was canceled 3 days before. 3 days before the entire country closed down. And to me, the close down is very much tied to Eurocon, as well as this Eurocon is very much tied to the reopening. That's why I'm here. One more reason to be here. Thank you very much.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia. Da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof. Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificast.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificast.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. L'autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Allarme rosso, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Chiudete l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigatevi.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì. Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
Blocco 7 pronto.
Pronto, attivato.
Blocco 7 posizionato.
Know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.